Jerry Pippin Show with Walter Broadcasting, direct from the International UFO Museum and Research Center here in the one and only Roswell, New Mexico. We have the one and only Glenn Dennis. You're one of the original names that started this whole thing.
I am one of the idiots that started the whole mess, you bet.
Glenn, glad to have you on the air with me.
Well, appreciate you being here.
Now, you have a pretty good crowd this weekend.
Well, I understand. I forgot how many thousand, but we have 2,300 in here right now, and yesterday was... Did you hear any figures?
Well, I heard somewhere around 3,500 to 1,700 on Thursday night.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
It's pretty good, I think.
Roswell on the map, didn't it?
Yes, it certainly did. In fact, Roswell's grown quite a lot since the last time I was here.
Yeah, Roswell is on the growth again. We have it's a retirement center, and we love these people. They come in from all over the with the cold weather in Montana and all of the places in Seattle and different places, and we love them. They're volunteers here in our museum.
About 1947, when you were at the mortuary here and the Air Force Base was going full blast, what was the population then?
Well, Roswell was about 10,000 people when they put the base first, put it in here. And then after the war, they closed it up for a while, and now then they have all kinds of industries. They have medical centers. They have rehabilitation places out there. They have training for all of these policemen, border patrols, and all of them train a lot of their people out there. So they're making very good use of that.
Now, you, of course, back in 47, were familiar with everybody at Roswell because at the Air Force Base, including the mortuary officer.
Yeah, I grew up in the funeral business at the time. I was working mowing yards when the funeral home when I was 12 years old, 13. When I was in the third grade, the teacher goes around the room, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I said, I'm going to be an undertaker. And so she comes back around. So help me God, I'm not lying. So anyway, she comes back around later and says, stand up, Mr. Dennis. And I was scared of her anyway. And she said, I want to know why, and the class wants to know why you want to be a mortuary, an undertaker. And on my way to school every day, I had to pass in front of this funeral home. A lot of times the old hearse and ambulance would be there, and I'd go sit in the front seat there, and the old man would come out and run me off, But anyway...
it's kind of like I was about radio.
Yeah, and so anyway, I never did plan on doing anything else, and I told my father, he was a contractor and everything, and my brother was an architect, and they wanted me to go in a company. I said, no, I'm going to be an undertaker. And my dad said, son, the sorest human being in the world is an undertaker. You know, I want you to do something better than that.
Well, I'm not so sure he was right about
so
that.
So anyway, when I, after I got through high school and I decided I was going to go to San Francisco College of Mortuary Science, I had to have 2 years of college, and I could get it all there in San Francisco, so I did that. But he did change his mind. Before he died, he said he was real proud of me.
Well, I'm sure you've been quite successful now. Now, again, I'm sure that that a night or was it morning by the time you heard about this Roswell crash, I'm sure it's just like it was yesterday, instead of 56 years ago.
Well, you know, I've still been involved with their base out there, But the way I got involved, the mortuary officer called and wanted to know how many infernomatically sealed caskets we had in stock and what was our preparation for bodies laying out in the helmet. I said, sir, if you're the mortuary officer, you got to tell me what you got. But you also, the military will tell you exactly how they want these bodies prepared and what procedure to use.
Yeah, they had specifications.
And everything, and certain types of fluids and all. And I said, I better come out and look at it and see what you got. And he said, that won't be necessary. Then about an hour later, I got an emergency. There was an airman riding an old Indian motorcycle over here on the east side of town. He had a farmer's trailer going into the scales at the gym. And when I arrived out to the airbase with him, and that's where these amulets were backed up that were full of debris. So after I checked him in, signed all the vouchers, this big red-headed captain there, and I said, sir, it looked like we had a crash. I need to get ready for it. And about said, stay right there. Don't take a step. In a few minutes, I had MPs coming from every direction. And they drove my ambulance back, too, by the way.
Oh, they did.
I was sitting back between two biggest old military policemen, and I was ranting and raving, cussing, I got this in my ambulance, you don't have business, when you're 18 years old, you're
sure,
pretty brave. And they told me, kid, shut up. You're a nice kid. You're not going to like our facilities. Now just shut up. So I did.
So you thought better of it.
I better do it because I've fixed people up out of that facility once before.
Now they never actually needed the caskets. Is that right?
They never did call back. They were shipped out. They came from the crash site in what we call body bags. They came directly into the base. They were put on a plane. And Major Marcel was in charge of it, of all the operation here. They flew directly. They went to Fort Worth, picked up General Ramey, went directly into Wright-Patterson. Anything that's anomaly in our government or anything else, it goes to Wright-Patterson, Ohio.
Now, later on, did you get more discussion or find out more information about, or was it really kept quiet?
No, after that, you know, no one got too excited in Roswell. I was curious, and I tried every way in the world asking everybody I could, but no one wanted to talk about it.
Nobody would talk about
Walter
it.
Walter Hawk was information. I was first lieutenant, and Walter and I were very good friends, but he couldn't talk to me either, and we were very good friends.
How about later on, has Walter been able to?
No, maybe 10 years later, but
yeah, right.
He couldn't talk to me either, and we were very good friends.
How long have you had the UFO museum here now?
This is our 10th year. There's a gentleman by the name of George Fawcett that did the UFO, studying ufology for years and years. And he was about 83 years old, and he was looking for some place. He was going to donate all this to Smithsonian. Then he found out if he did, it would all be in boxes down in the basement, and no one would ever see it. So he heard about Walter and me and Max, and so we flew him out here and interviewed, and then we ended up getting the collection.
So you never really got a chance to see any of the bodies, but you're pretty sure they were there.
I know they were there. I knew the nurse that gave me the diagram. If you saw that back on our wall.
Oh, yes, sir.
And she didn't get orders not to report. She was a real, real religious little girl. She was going to join a Catholic convent and be a nun, but she had to pay the government back 2 years for her education. But anyway, she didn't get orders not to report. And when she walked into this supply room to check out her supplies to make her rounds, that's where these two pathologists were in. They weren't doing an autopsy. They were taking pictures. But anyway, they said, Lieutenant, we have to have some help. And they were wanting her to she was real good in speed writing and shorthand. Mm-hmm. So they were explaining everything as they examined everything. And she just blew up and started screaming and crying and everything else. That's when I went out to the base on this emergency from this gentleman that was riding
on a motorcycle.
And she came out with this towel over her face and screamed at me, Glenn, get out of here as fast as you can. She was the one that told me, get out fast as you can.
So it was pretty horrifying.
It was to her. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I didn't get to see enough of it. I would like to have seen more of it.
Or anybody else tell you if there were anybody that was still alive or any being?
No, not to my knowledge. No, there wasn't anything alive. I knew the ranchers out there, and I knew the cowboy that rode up on all the debris and found all the debris.
What did he say about it?
Well, see, they were used to weather balloons. You know, the government said it was a weather balloon.
Yeah, right.
The weather balloons came up from over at Socorro, and these cowboys and ranch people looked for it. There's a little instrument on the end of those. And if they pick up that instrument, turn it back into the Weather Bureau, they got $25. They weren't even making $25 a month themselves.
Yeah, that's right. That was quite a lot of money.
So they looked for them. I mean, that was one of their jobs, is looking for that little instrument. But I knew the ranchers, and I knew the old boy also that was involved in this. I used to take him to Veterans Hospital every once in a while in the ambulance. But,
after all these years, what do you think really happened?
I don't think there's any question about it. The reason the government, I think, is keeping it because we don't have the elements in our planet even for the energy. We don't even know what it is. We don't have the materials. And I think Germany was the one that was leading with his research more than anybody else. And then when we took over Germany, we took over all their research.
That's right.
And so, but I haven't heard any more about it since then. But anyway, I know this one gentleman is a friend of mine. We went to school together, but he's at this, up in Los Alamos, and he doesn't discuss anything. He can't discuss anything with me, but he just said, my friends were up there. Don't worry about your friends. They were up there. He was talking about my aliens, you know.
Mm-hmm. So they went to Los Alamos at one time.
That was all he ever said. I don't know. He didn't tell me, and I didn't want to put him on the...
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. But he just told me my friends were... He said, your friends are up there, and pointed like that. He says, I know for a fact. So that was it.
This nurse that was very religious that told you to get out of there, did you talk to her about it later?
No, I never did. They shipped her out, and I never did talk to her after that.
Did they ship a lot of people out after that?
Not my knowledge. I don't know who all was involved in, but I knew her personally. And the nurse that was in charge, the captain that was in charge of nursing, called me at 3:30 that afternoon and just said, Wayne, your friend's been shipped out. And that was it. That's all she would tell me. Yeah.
Wow. Lynn, I really appreciate visiting with you about all of this.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you came in. I appreciate your time and effort.
You got a nice museum here, and the good thing is that you just take donations.
Well, I know, but this is our 501c3 nonprofit is education. We want these school kids and children in here, and we bus them in, and we want people to come in. A lot of families don't have the money, you know, to go pay bills, and we don't owe anybody any money. We're doing real well. Our gift shop is our source of income. We're doing all right.
The future looks bright, and for the museum, it looks bright.
Well, it's pretty good. We've been offered $500,000 for everything we have on the walls from Japan. We don't want it to go to Japan. It belongs right here.
Yeah, that's where it belongs.
It's hard to turn down $500,000 bucks, so I'll tell you.
Yeah, I started to say.
My wife said that's where two damn fools met.
So. Well, thanks very much, Glenn Dennis.
You bet. Glad to be here. Appreciate you coming.
Okay.